Thanks for tapping in on Tap Keg podcast, where we look at different perspectives of sobriety and mental health so that you can take something, implement it into your own life. Here, we believe there's only one right way to sobriety, and that's the way that works for you. I'm RJ Zimmerman, and I am very excited to be joined by Lindsay Valandry, who is a certified addiction counselor, someone who is in long-term recovery, and also a content creator over at youtube.com/recoverfromaddiction. How are you doing today, Lindsay?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk to your guest.
I'm excited to have you here because, you and I connected on social media, and seeing your videos and what you're doing, it's very much similar to what I want to spread and give people that hope and that cheer. And it's been really fun to connect, and I appreciate that. So
yeah, sure.
For people that don't know you, Lindsay, could you give us a little bit of a background into yourself?
Yes. Where do I start? Okay. So I'm Lindsay, and I'm in long-term recovery from, you name it, alcohol first, and then every type of pill, every type of drug, to heroin, to fentanyl. And then I got sober when I was 23 or turned 24, but right after I had a prison stint, and when I was 23. So I had a lot of consequences in my drinking and drug using. So I didn't have one rock bottom. It just kept going. Kind of like a process and accumulation of those things. But I got sober when I was 24. I just couldn't take it anymore, just everything. And I finally realized this is the end of the road. Like, I cannot have a normal life. You know, I cannot live life just however I want to at all. At the same time as, you know, because I wanted to have my substance or substances that I thought I was going to find a perfect cocktail of drugs and or alcohol that would enable me to kind of just function like all the time. And yeah. I never found it. I really tried, but that was literally my goal. I remember thinking that in my head, and now when I look back at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like all that brain power and energy that I used on that, it's better spent doing something like this, right? Like what we're doing now. But, I realized that I didn't really know what life was about. I mean, who really does, right? But I really was just lost. I was lost. But I didn't really, I don't think I knew that. I think I just didn't want to grow up. And so this was like, I'm going to do whatever I want. Life is just going to figure itself out. I don't know. And then you just start getting older. Well, I started getting older and realizing like nothing's changing. It's just getting worse. So, you know, I went to jail 11 times, and it's like a lot of people ask me, not people in recovery usually ask me, why did it take you so many times? Like, why did you keep doing that? And I'm like, I wish I could tell you, but I can't. And so it doesn't even matter, but it's just interesting to hear other people's perspective on that, you know? So I got sober when I was 24. I went to a treatment center in North Palm. I guess it's like really the same thing. I don't know. on the other coast. So I'm in Florida, on Tampa side. So I'm on the West Coast. So I traveled all the way over there. My dad took me to treatment, and, it was like a really expensive rehab. I had no idea, but my mom had good insurance, and I was young then. It was under 26 for the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, whatever it's called. And so I went over there 30 days, and I was like introduced to these huge NA groups. But people with like 30, 60, 90 days, 120 days running these groups. And I was like, what? Like, it was just nothing I've ever seen, you know? And I'm like, this is kind of cool because there's a lot of young people. And then we went to AA meetings, and it was just like huge. I didn't realize that like recovery is a huge thing over there. It's not like that everywhere, but it was cool to see how many people were into it, you know, like into like bettering their life and not doing it anymore. And I'm like, I'm 24. So that appealed to me. I thought, well, maybe I could just, this is cool. Like maybe this is it. so this will be easier than I thought, you know? But so when I left there, I did 30 days there. And when, before I left there, I had to, well, I decided to come up with a outpatient program by my house. So I called him, this guy, John Tumbleton. I actually had him on my show, pretty cool guy. He was the owner, young guy. And so it was like a small, like a beginning kind of rehab, a couple of years open, him and his brother and his dad. And he said, yeah, like I'm literally like 5 minutes away. I could ride my bike over the beach bridge. And I went over there, and there was only like 5 clients. It was pretty cool. 10 clients at the most ever. And I got sober there because I did relapse after, you know, I was going to AA, but I remember getting my wisdom teeth pulled and then boom. And so I had to go back inpatient there. I was doing outpatient first, and then the owner is like, John's like, you're going to spiral out of control real quick. And I was starting to. So I took him up on the offer. He was like, whatever. I don't know what your insurance is covered. It's whatever. Like, they were so kind. They're like, just get your ass in here. And so that's like where my actual journey started. I know it started in on the other coast and the other rehab, but I don't think like things started coming together in my mind until that point. And you know, I started and made my roots in AA, and that's, you know, I went to all the meetings, like I started going every day like a maniac, and started finding people there that were my community, because that's what I needed. And over the years, well, actually, when I had a year sober, I went and I worked for him at that rehab. And so I worked there a couple of years. I got certified as a certified behavioral health technician, a CBHT in Florida. And so that was like a year working in treatment center and all that stuff. And then I went to another treatment center, and I met a husband there. I met my ex-husband there. He was a counselor, and then they were training me to be a counselor. And so like life was good, right? I'm like coming on 3.5 years sober, and I relapsed with my ex-husband, and I relapsed hard. Like, this is where like the needles and all the other stuff came in that he had experience with, but I really didn't. And I was like really against it, obviously. And then I was like, okay, well, you know, running out of money and it's cheaper and just all that stuff that happens that I never thought. So I had like a whole nother level of shame about to be upon me, right? But I didn't know. And I stopped eventually, but I had to get away from him. We couldn't do it together. And he ended up putting himself in jail. And so that was the end of that. We divorced while he was in jail and never looked back. I got my old job back at this other treatment center, worked there for a couple years. I worked at a couple other treatment centers over the years. And I've done every single, like almost every single job position in a treatment center, like insurance, admissions, like billing, like all this stuff. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. There's so much to it. I didn't want to go back to counseling, but the owner of the treatment center was like, you need to go back and get your certified addiction counselor. You have like half of it done. And so I was like, yeah, maybe I am a good counselor. And he's like, yeah, we'll put you in this position. And so it was like me and another guy, like running this treatment center. I work with him now at this other treatment center. We both left and he pulled me over here. So I work in a treatment center that's not a treatment center. It's in-home addiction treatment. So I go to the client once a week. It's pretty cool. It's pretty progressive, I guess you could say, in terms of addiction. And I thought, oh, wow, this is, I don't know about this, but it's working very well. I have the clients for a year, so it's pretty cool. I've had like multiple clients graduate. That's pretty cool. So now what do? I just started playing on Twitter one day, like maybe 2 years ago. I don't even know it was that long ago, maybe a year and a half. And I made a recovery Twitter, and I was just like, oh, I'm going to post cute little graphics and like, I don't know, just play around. And I didn't really go on it much. And then I started to get into it, and I don't know why, what really happened. I just started posting more and getting to know people. And I was like, this is wild. Like, this is a big community and people are pretty cool. For the most part, right? So
yeah.
So that's kind of how it started. And then I remember I had a friend that was into YouTube, and he's making a lot of videos and stuff. And he's like, why aren't you doing videos like that? You could be, instead of just writing posts. And I'm like, I don't know, I'm a little self-conscious. I don't want to, like, I don't know, like how I look or whatever. I just saying, he's like, what? I was like, I don't know. So I just was like, F it, I'm gonna do it. And I got good feedback. And so I've been doing it. I took a couple weeks off because I have so much stuff and I can't, it's like I try to divide all my attention and it doesn't work. So I have to like go back and forth. But I think that's pretty much, I don't know. Ask away any
Yeah.
questions. I probably forgot a lot of stuff. I have
Well,
always
I hear you completely with the life like starts to get more, and so it's like what is going to take the, priority, what's going to take a little bit of a backseat for a little bit, but then noticing that things are taking a backseat and now you get more time, that's when, you can start to add things in. And that's been important for me, in especially like as I'm really discovering myself past, the drinking and everything, is what in my life adds to it. And then there's obviously things that are always going to happen in life that kind of take away from or take some of your attention and time away. So those things that add to it aren't going to be there every single day. But noticing that those things aren't there, what, how can I get back to them to be able to feel that fulfillment? Like that's such a powerful thing to be able to take stock of your life and, take that inventory. And I think sometimes we forget that you can actually do that, and it's a good thing. And life doesn't just have to be happening, right? You can actually take life and make things happen.
beautifully said. I think that I forgot about it for a couple of years. And then a few weeks ago, I'm like, hey, I don't want to go on the internet today. And I was like, I mean, like half a day, but I was like, I can choose to do whatever I want. And it was just like funny because I'm like saying
Yeah.
this to myself. And I'm like, duh, Lindsay, like, what is good for you? Like, you don't have, you don't have to do anything. So that was cool,
That's a great point too, like these lessons that we learn, right? Sometimes we take them for granted and we just kind of like forget them, and then it's like, oh yeah, I can actually do this thing. That's right. I remember that now. How did I forget
I do that
that?
all the time. It's like I don't know if people think I'm joking when I'm like talking about it on YouTube or whatever. I'm like, oh my God, like just obvious things that like I forget all the time. And I'm talking recovery all day and it doesn't matter. I still am like, oh, that's right. Something so simple, It's
Yeah.
wild.
Yeah,
Every day
that
experience though.
absolutely. I listen to a lot of different like business and then, I guess I'll call it holistic health, like podcast stuff like that. And something that they talk about is like the curse of expertise. Like when you gain this knowledge that is, you start to get beyond the basics. Sometimes you forget just those basic level things because you've moved past that. So you've had to take your knowledge and then just like add it too. So sometimes we can kind of forget some of those basic things. So when we come back to them, it's like, oh yeah, that is the first part. That is the first step, right? So.
So true. I like that. I've never heard that before, but it's like I'll get to the point where I'm like, all right, back to the basics. I forgot about the basics. It's like, what? That's crazy.
And for people who are athletes, like this is huge. This is why you teach fundamentals at every single level, because
Oh,
without
yeah.
those fundamentals, you can't build on the skills above it. So you get back to doing things the right way, the simple things, and then all of a sudden you see those more advanced skills start to get a little bit better. That's something that I love to do, is like take things from that a lot of people have experience with. Like even at a young level, you were taught the fundamentals. Again, every single year, like let's say 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade, and
Yeah.
so on. And it can be the same thing where you relearn those fundamentals so that you can start to do those more advanced things. And I go through that a lot of the time too. Like I go through cycles of journaling where I'll go for like 4 or 5 months of journaling every single day, and then I'll take like 2 months off because I'm just like, I just can't right now. And
Yeah.
then I'll go like 2, 3 times a week for a little while, and then I'll ramp it back up to every day. And it's like, that's just, I don't know. I feel like that's a cycle, right? Like,
I do it too. That's funny. Yeah, I do the same thing. it's like I just forget about it or something. I don't know. I'm like, later. And then I'm like, maybe not for a while. It's fine. It's okay though, right? So
yeah, it's what works for us in that moment, right? Not everything is going to work the same at every single moment. There's going to be things that work and things that kind of have that gap a little bit. But
yeah, true.
That's kind of when you embrace that, it could be the fun spice of life. Like, what's it going to be this month? What's it going to be next month? Like, who knows? There's some fun in that when you embrace it.
That's so true. That's very true. I like that.
Yeah. So you were mentioning about the in-home recovery that you're doing now and how that's a little bit progressive. What about it feels progressive to you? Because I'm really interested in these different ways that people can use that are out there that they may not know about.
I will, I don't like to say the company that I'm associated
yep.
with, not for any reason, just because I don't want to ever represent or anything, right? So I can send you the website and everything when we're talking, and then you could explain it, you know, in your terms if you want. But I think there's other programs doing it now too. I've heard different things from across the country, but so I'm in Florida and the company is in 10 other states, no, 10 total states. I'm sorry. And they're soon to be opening another state, but so it's like, I'm mobile, like I'm remote, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
I'm remote. I work from home. And I'm a recovery advisor, which is basically like counseling, or peer. Some people are peers and some are counselors, but
okay.
We all do the same thing. So that's the position. And then there's two, every client has an individualized team, a care team. And so there's two of me and someone else that does the same job role, and a nurse or a social worker, either or, it's different depending on different needs. And then there's a therapist and a family facilitator. So they get to work with a family. And so it's like every single team, I have like 15 clients. A lot of times it's like the base. And they will have different teams for every single client. Like I don't have the same team for, I never have in a couple of years, right? So it's pretty cool. It's whoever lives closest to the client, whoever, you know, certain ones, maybe struggling with something that I might be better at or whatever and relate to. And so I get assigned to them and then we go on a visit and, you know, usually to their house. Sometimes it's like I went to one at a Starbucks because the girl was at a sober living and didn't want to do that. But I've had a lot in the sober living homes. And the cool thing is when I started this job, I thought, oh, this is like the level of care after maybe outpatient, right? Because
yeah.
Outpatient treatment center is like a couple of days a week usually, right? And this is 1 hour of me with the client a week. The other person in my job role is an hour with them too. So it's me and them kind of together. And then the nurse is once a month for an hour, and the family facilitator doesn't even talk to the client. So they're with the family once a month. And the therapist is once every week or once every 2 weeks. So, and it's a whole year long. So that's what I think is phenomenal. It's like the year long, like the program I worked at before this was 6 months with veterans. And I thought that was amazing. But when I heard that insurance would pay for a whole year, they had to go get a whole like other thing to be able to, I don't want to say too much, but a whole other thing to where they can be in network and keep the clients for a year. So it's not all insurances or that does it, but it's a lot of like the insurances you can get for free on the affordable care, whatever it's called now. I don't know, changes
yeah.
all the time. The marketplace or something.
Yep.
So I thought that was pretty damn cool because certain insurance that I know that inpatient places won't even take, they're taking them. And I guess that is because it's the lower level of care. So that's the advantage there. More people can afford it. And I wish this was around when I was getting sober, because when I relapsed, you know, I had a baby and I was like, I'm not going to inpatient. And I was just so erratic and, you know, I couldn't go. I didn't have insurance anymore. I didn't have the time. I didn't have anything that I could do it. And so that would have helped because, you know, like I will meet them at work sometimes. I'll meet them out, like I go shopping with them sometimes. You know, I go to my gym with my client. So it's cool. It's different, but they're all at different levels. And that's what's kind of cool because some of them are like, they didn't go to treatment. They just come straight here. And we're going to have mobilized detox soon. So that will be pretty cool to where it's like remote detox. So we'll see. That would be wild. I guess they did it in another state. But so it's just something that I didn't think that I would ever go for. And when I started here, my mind started opening to more things because things that I had been more traditional and like old school was kind of how I was in AA. And then, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I got away from going to meetings all the time. I kind of just ventured on and my recovery took on many forms. I started doing smart recovery, different things with clients and everything started expanding for me. I'm like, there's so much out there. There's so much out there that is like, oh my God, it's wild. Like I thought for so long, this is the only pathway, like A is the only pathway. And because it had worked for me, right? But I'm not saying it's good or bad, but just that was just at the time that was what worked. Yep. And I didn't know why it worked at the time. I could see a lot of things now broken down, which is really cool. So I can really actually give individualized treatment while actually believing in it. So I'm not like, I don't know. Yes. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes, you have that. Like that dueling banjos or dueling pianos almost where I'm going to give you this treatment and I know it kind of works. However, I know there was something that was a little bit different that worked for me. And, you know, what you're describing is, you know, something that is starting to be talked about a lot more. And obviously there's places like where you work, where it's starting to be implemented, but that holistic approach where I feel like the old school, the traditional that started back in the early 1900s was, oh, you just remove this thing and then you can go about living your life and you'll be fine. Right. Mm-hmm. But now we understand like it's not just about removing that. It's about, and you mentioned this earlier, your life, how can you live your life now? And that is still there, right? It's still an option, but you just don't choose it because it's not going to help you in your life. So you showing people, oh, you can go do this and it might look a little bit different, but it's not like you can still have fun and not drink. Like that is such a myth, is that you give up like just alcohol or whatever it is. And, oh, I'm not going to be able to have fun now. How am I going to be able to go do this thing and not have that and not have fun? And the truth is maybe you don't go do that thing anymore. But are you actually going to miss it? Like that's, people ask me all the time, don't you miss like drinking and the fun that you had while you were doing it? And I'm like, well, I wouldn't like doing that anymore. So do I miss it? No. Like if I go and do the same thing, yeah, it's not going to be fun because that doesn't interest me. Like I'm a completely different person. And so embracing trying to figure out who you are, like actually who you are and not just who you feel like you're supposed to be. Finding that connection inside yourself. Oof.
That beautifully said. It's so true. And the thing is too, so my transformation has kind of become my, I don't know, my journey, my driving force now I don't want to say in content creation, but like in the social media. It's almost like my goal now, my mission statement is to let people see that you don't have to do it this certain way. That's not, because what happens is we tell them they're a failure if they don't get sober using this way, like maybe they had or we had been sober, right? And it really like hurts me, man, like thinking about it, because I've seen so many clients come back for meetings. I used to make them go, and I don't do any of that anymore. I had a tough love approach when I was early in sobriety, right? Where I didn't I didn't realize. I was like, this is the way.
Yeah.
It's like terrible. It didn't help anybody. And now I'm getting kind of, I get a lot of pushback on social media because of, and you see me and a couple of the people I associate with, because we say, hey, it's okay. Like, if you mess up, get back up again. Like, you're not a loser, you know?
Yes.
And do what works for you. And I think like those people are getting left in the dark, and and it really kind of gets to me, because it's people that sit there and say how spiritual they are, how great. And it just like kind of rubs me the wrong way. And I want to be the voice to be like, hey, it's okay. You know, like I want to make resources available. I just started doing a smart recovery facilitator training. Like, it's freaking awesome. Like, the program is great. And it's like, they believe in all pathways and it's their program. So it's pretty cool. But what else was I going to say? I don't remember.
Yeah. And what you're saying, that's the exact reason that I start the show with, there's only one right way to sobriety, right? And it's the way that works for you, because I didn't use any programs. I haven't drank in over 10, over 10 years. So you don't have to use anything that somebody tells you you have to. Like, and that's what I try to tell people in this podcast. And so many things in this podcast is like supercharged my self-discovery. And that's why my content is more about that self-discovery, right? Because you hear those stories and you're like, that exact thing isn't going to work for me, but there's a piece in there I can take. There's a piece that I can take, and I know that something will resonate there. And that's what it's about. So like, I'm a This Naked Mind certified alcohol-free life coach.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh my God. You have to tell me more about that. I love that book. And I like that lady, Annie.
Yeah. Yep. And so I work with them in the groups that they have that are online to help people stop drinking. And really the way that they say it and what we say is, we help you get a healthy relationship with alcohol, which tends to be stopping drinking.
Yeah, right.
So,
right.
And like, it's a year-long group, same thing. Like, there's six coaches per group, and it's 1 hour a day you get with each coach. And there's usually one or two coaches that you resonate with. So you'll see the same people kind of come into your meetings, but you'll switch meetings with people and you'll get, you know, in front of different people and stuff like that. And it's just, it's a different way of approaching it, but it's like you're saying, like having all of these different ones, there's some that are going to resonate with one type of, you know, just ways to get sober, like journeys, right? Of these philosophies. That's the way, that's what I wanted to go with. And that's okay. Like, go to what resonates with you. There is no wrong way. And right. That's what I want people to know.
Yeah. I want to say, I just remembered something that is pretty crucial in my recovery, is that when, you know, because I was heavily involved for years, I even went to two meetings a day, and I even, you know, I was chairing meetings, I was doing everything, and that was kind of like my ego. I was, you know, I didn't realize it at the time, and that did lead, I think it had a big part to do with me picking up again, because I was so of this mindset of like, I know everything, and egotistical, but I don't know how else to, what other words to use besides that. I just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Then I fell on my ass.
One of my friends described it as egocentric.
Yeah.
Like, because there's egotistical where like it's all about me, and then it's egocentric, like how things can kind of impact me, and then you get, so yeah, okay. I think like egocentric would be a good word to describe what you're describing.
Yeah. And so, you know what, when I also, when I got sober again, and I did go back to the meetings initially. And then, you know, it just like started changing. Like I started learning more about other things. I had clients that, seeing their experiences and seeing that they get sober other ways, I could no longer sit there and see these people in front of my face and be like, you can't get sober. That's not real. That's kind of what I feel like people are saying. It's like, I see you right in front of me, that you use a different pathway and that you're doing great, but I'm just cognitive dissonance. Just like, you don't exist or whatever. It's just like so crazy to me. But people told me, you're going to relapse. when I stopped going to meetings as much, and I felt such guilt. I don't even know how to describe it. And it was like a good year long to where I'm like, can I trust my own thinking? They say I can't trust my own thinking. They say like I have a thinking problem and that I stay away from this. And so I was like tripping, like thinking like I can't even trust myself. I have years sober, but I'm like, if I don't do this anymore, then I'm gonna fall on my ass. And then what happened was the people kept coming at me like that. And it really like hurt me, you know, like they really kind of jumped on me and made me feel like I'm bad or something, or I'm like making a mistake. And I said, you know what? I finally like just stood up to it. Cause at first I was like, I don't want to tell people I'm not going to meetings. I was like scared of being judged. And that's so crazy to me. And I don't want to feel like that. But that drove me out even more. It made my decision much easier when I saw the feedback of where people are telling me like, you're stupid basically, and you don't know what you're doing. You can't live your own life. You know, we need to be there. You need to, whatever, you know, I hate that.
Yeah. Like that evangelizing, right? Like that way. And
yeah,
this is where I think like a lot of people, they get stuck in their ways because they get something that helps them, right? That makes them feel better about themselves, and they start identifying with that.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, you said it. Yes.
Yeah. And when you identify with something, now you can't go outside of it, because if you go outside of it, you're attacking your own identity.
Yes.
And
yes.
So you're going to respond with anger. And that's what we're seeing a lot in society right now, is we're identifying with these things that we shouldn't really be identifying with, because they're actually not us. Like these external things that we're bringing, we're like, well, this is me. This is me, and it's my personality. And that becomes armor, and it closes our mind off to everything else, because if I look at something else, then I'm attacking myself. I can't do that.
And you're attacking me if you don't agree with what I did. And that,
yep.
You know, that when I figured out that it was, I remember saying it to Adam, my friend Adam on X, and I said, oh my God, it's because it's identity. He's like, yeah. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Yeah. I was like, I just feel like I figured it. It's like, I kind of thought I told you that. And I'm like, I don't know. It just, I finally like, it just registered to me that, and it's the same with like everything. Like you said, like political
yes.
identity. I'd be like, why is everybody so mad? Like, why do they feel like, why is it a fight between us as people? It's not about the issues. It's about you. And like, I don't know. And so that's what I'm experiencing now, on X. And I'm trying to just, I don't want to be that person, even though I want to like say something back. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be like them, you know? And so that's took a lot of change within me to like learn how to respond. And I still catch myself wanting to be like an attack, but it's not, it doesn't help my cause or my recovery to do that. So it's interesting.
And how does it help your mental health if you attack too?
Bueno, that's really the biggest.
Yeah.
I don't like being angry. I know I'm going to get angry. Obviously it's like a normal human thing, but when I start like attacking people, that's the old me, you know, like I was aggressive or passive aggressive. Like it was like one extreme to the other, not ever assertive. And I learned how to be assertive years into recovery. It took me a while and I'm still learning. And so now I'm like, when I do that, I feel like old Lindsay and I don't like it, you know, because it just makes me feel like a hangover of anger, you know?
Yes. I feel that same way too. Like with some of my clients, I try to explain to them like, you know, I get angry. Like I still get angry, but in those moments, I'm able to step back a little bit and look at, okay, is this going, am I going to wake up tomorrow morning? And if I follow this anger, am I going to feel good about how I acted and like how that went? I'm not. Okay. What is a different way that I can act that I would wake up and I would, wow, I handled that really well. And that doesn't mean that I do that, like I'm able to do that every single time. I'm human. And so there's been times like in the past month that I have reacted and like my anger has gotten, But I've had that hangover effect that you're talking about, where it's like afterwards, I'm like, damn it. Like that shame comes up, like, right? Like that was there with the hangover and that anxiety. And it's, well, all right. This is the first time this month. That's pretty good. All right. Let's see if we can continue just one time this month. But even if it's two, it's okay. Like you're taking in the data and you're using it for that future. Like, who do you want to be? Maybe I'll never get to that Zen, always responding, never reacting. I don't even know if that's possible, but it's okay, because how many times do I respond how I want to respond compared to reacting how I didn't want to react? And it's like, when you put those, look at those two next to each other, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm doing pretty damn good.
Good point. I would, for years, actually, I would kind of get, I would get mad at myself and say, oh my gosh, I'm like, one thing I would react and I would be like, oh my God, I see, I'm not changing. I'm still Lindsay. I'm still failure in that black and white thinking. And so that was another thing, trying to, yes, like, it's, you just said, well, I'm making progress. It's like, I'm not going to be perfect. Why would I expect myself? So, you know, that the cognitive distortions always would get me, and now I can recognize it and more easily, not always, but you know,
right. But all right, even, yeah, after the words though, instead of just like going into the shame, and you can recognize like where it happened, oh, I didn't want this to happen, that's still recognizing, right? Like, that's what I like to tell people, is especially at the beginning, you're probably not going to catch it in the middle. That's okay, right? You're not going to catch it before it happens, especially. But if afterwards you look at it and you're like, oh, this is kind of the point where I wanted to change that behavior, now you recognize it, and that's the first step, right? That is, once you recognize it, now you're aware of it. And before, you weren't, because you didn't know. It's that blind spot. You don't know what you don't know.
Yes, exactly. So true. So true.
When it came to learning to be assertive, what was something that really helped you to like start down and express that assertiveness?
Good question. And it just popped in my head that when I started working in the rehab, I had to live with the females. Like, it was a big, you know, I was like the house mom. And I had a room in the big house, like with like eight other ladies, and it was not soundproof, right? So there was always something going on. There was always, like, you know, just a lot of women in the same place. It's just what happens. A lot of arguing, a lot of loudness. I just want to emphasize that, because that really, loudness bothers me a lot. And they would get in trouble, I guess. I don't know what else I could say more client-centered than that. I don't like saying in trouble, but, you know, where I would need to address something, basically. And I couldn't do it because I didn't know boundaries, because living with them, it's like, I couldn't figure out, like, they're not my friend, but I'm in this space with them, doing life things with them. Like, and that was the hardest thing, just like trying to decipher, like, what is my boundary here? Like, what am I doing? And it took me years, but I finally figured it out. It took me years. And I remember even, you know, counseling and stuff, or doing group therapy. Like, I could not say, like, in my mind, I realized that I didn't consciously say this to myself or recognize it, but eventually it did, that it was like, I can't tell you the truth without being aggressive or something. If I tell you the truth, I'm being mean. I think that's what my mind was thinking.
Oh,
you
know what yes, I mean? Yes, absolutely.
It was like, because I don't know, it was like the fear of, like, maybe they don't like me, or maybe it had to be that, right? It had to be like fear of not accepting me or not liking
me. Was
it
people pleasing?
I think it was like fear of, like, yeah, which would probably go with that. It was like fear of, like, you won't like me if I tell you to not do something or tell you that that's not a good idea. And that was really hard for me. I had no idea. It took me just doing it. I was so uncomfortable. And I remember like, and I was honest about it because I would, you know, working in the treatment center, you get therapists that help you. Like I have to meet with them and they taught me how to do it and what to do. And I'm like, oh my God. And like literally when I had a meeting with my superiors, like a couple months ago, the lady that's like the director said, you have a pretty assertive personality, you know? And I'm like, yeah.
Like, that's right, I do.
I was like, that's weird. And I was like, oh, okay. But because I never, it was like a pushover, passive aggressive, like how am I going to like, you know, because I'm scared. And now I'm like, I'm not scared to like say anything. I don't care. Like, I don't care if you like me. Like,
right. That's, you know? So I'm a parent too. I have a 6 and 4 year old. And sometimes both of them now will tell me, Daddy, I don't like you. Right. And that used to hurt me in my heart, like, especially when they were younger. And somebody said this to me yesterday and it was brilliant. Like when I was parenting from a dysregulated state, like that really hurt me. Right. When they said that to me, it hit me. I'm like, I am parenting from a regulated state now. That's where a lot of this is. Wow. I did not put those two and two together, but yeah. So
I like that. I didn't.
Right. I'd never heard that before. And I'm like, oh my God, it is. And so, but they'll tell me, Daddy, I don't like you. And my response is, that's okay. That wasn't in the contract. All that was in the contract was that I'm going to love you no matter what. And I have to do some things that you're not going to like sometimes.
Yeah.
And they'll look at me like, what? And I'm like, it's okay. You don't like me. You're not always going to like me. I don't expect you to. In fact, if you do, I'm probably doing it wrong, to be honest.
Mine is 7. He just turned 7 in December. And it's the same thing. It's been coming up more and more. And he goes, I'm going to stay at my mom's house and move out of here if you keep telling me what to do.
Yeah.
He's like, you're being mean because I'm telling him, like, hey, you got to, like, brush your teeth.
Right.
like a freaking standoff, like, sometimes, like.
It is. Yep. And the brushing of the teeth.
For him. And I'm like, I'm going to teach you how to grow up and be an independent man. Because that wasn't how I was brought up, was like everything was done for me, you know? And I feel like that caused a lot of issues, you know?
Yeah.
Not to say anything bad about my parents, they didn't know. It's weird how we overcorrect from like our parents. And so they were doing it from their parents. It's just weird how that works, you know, through the generations, but.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I look like the mean guy, you know?
Oh yeah. I was, like the first time that this like happened to me and it dawned on me was we were at a park, and leaving the park is the worst part, right? Because we have to, we're leaving the fun place and we had to go eat. It was past dinner time. We were there for like 2 hours. It was time to go. And he's crying and telling me I'm the meanest dad ever. And I was listening to the 10% Happier podcast and they were talking about some Buddhist principles. And I, just came out of my mouth was like, because I was losing my patience and I was like, yeah. Oh, I'm like, you know what? I'm grateful that that's what you think mean is. And
true.
Just saying that like reset my patience. Like, oh, I came from listening to that podcast that maybe, and it came from deep inside of me. Right. But it wasn't like a conscious thing. It just kind of came out. And then my oldest stops crying and he responds with, Daddy, what does grateful mean? And it just reset the entire mood. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is better. This is better. And so I described grateful, and it's just these moments, right, that happen that are like, wow, interesting.
I love that though. It's like, I'm glad that that's what you think mean is. I'm stealing that.
Yeah,
good. So true. I'm like, I get like, I'm like, you're irritating me, Silas. I'm like, stop badgering me, and I need to just, you know. So it's a learning experience. I've never been a parent before, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what am I don't know, trying to figure it out though.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is giving yourself that grace that, yeah, you are going to get frustrated. You're a parent. Like, It is frustrating. It's hard. There are so many hard things. You're human.
Yeah. But it's beautiful, the journey.
It is.
It's cool. It's like being a parent is the, like, I didn't want to really be a parent. And then I planned to have him. Like, we planned to get pregnant and everything. And I was like, wow, what a, it was like once I got sober and stuff and I realized like there's so much to life. And like, I want to have a family. Like, those are the things that I want now and that I, you know, really value is like just normal things, or just, you know, traditional looking, like a family, going to work. Like, that stuff was not what I wanted before. And now I'm like, that is happiness for me. Like, I love it, you know.
I think that this is a great place to ask that question. You know, what does happiness mean to you?
Ooh, so a couple of weeks ago, I was watching something. I don't remember who it was. And he was saying happiness is growth. It's like the constant, not bettering yourself, but like the struggles and like the challenges and like that, the growth, that's where it is. It's in that, and pushing yourself to do that. And I was like, so true. Like, because it's not a permanent state, obviously. I used to think it was. I used to think, like, you're either happy or you're not, right?
Yep.
And so now I like to say content. But it's hard when you say content. Some people don't know. They're like, what do you mean content? Like, you don't want more out of your life? I'm like, no, I'm okay in this moment. I'm happy with myself. I'm not going to stop trying to better myself in my life and be more connected in whatever I do, you know? So I think it's like a constant thing. Cause like he said, think about if you're a king or something, like eating all the food at the end of the table, the big long ass table. And he's like, what do you have to do? You have everything. Like, what are you, you don't have to do anything all day. Like, you don't work towards that. Like, that's why I love having projects now, just like little things. And I'm like, that's why I'm so content that I never was before. You know, the kind of huge part of my sobriety is like, I never finished anything before. I never completed anything. It was like, okay, if I didn't like something, I was just like, I'm leaving school. I'm dropping out. I'm not doing this because I don't have to. And I no longer feel like that. Like, it's interesting because like now I'm like, I finish things and I like reach my goals and it's crazy, but only practicing that has gotten me to realize that. So like doing hard things that I never thought I could do and like going through the steps. And then I'm like, I get a little more confidence because I'm like, oh my God, look what I did. Like, I really stuck that through. I'm like, that feels good. I'm going to keep doing that, you know? So I just love
it. And that's the reason that I asked you that is because I have found so often when we think about, and this was including me too, like happiness is that state of life that you're just always in, like that you have. And oftentimes when people answer it, what they're answering with is like excitement. And so trying to be in that constant state of excitement, you can't be in that. Right. And it's sometimes they come back with the definition of joy, like, that's what happiness is. And there's truth to that, right? Joy is it's a very happy emotion and feeling to have. But what I've also come is using the same word as that contentment. That doesn't mean that I'm going to stay where I am. It's just I'm present right now and I'm okay with this present. And that piece that comes with that, like I had that, when I had that realization, it was just like, this is probably what happiness is that people talk about.
That's so true though. And you know what? I think I don't know that I could be sober, or, you know, I don't want to speak for other people, but I think there's a huge key in what you just said, you know, like being, if I was not content in this moment, I mean, if I'm content in this moment, what would I seek external validation from, like alcohol or drugs? I wouldn't, you know. Maybe that's a key thing there.
I feel like that is a key thing, because just thinking about clients, my own journey, you know, seeing other people, what they do, all of that, like that's huge. It is huge.
Cool.
So Lindsay,
yes.
If people wanted to keep up with you and give you a follow and watch your content, how best could they do that?
Well, I'm very active on X, formerly Twitter. I had to throw that in there. And it's at L_Villandry, VILLANDRY. I'm on the Facebook at Lindsay Villandry, Instagram. I'll send it because I have a couple different ones. I can't remember the names. And LinkedIn. No, just wherever, you know, and YouTube, Recover from Addiction is my name on there.
Yep. And you can find all those in the description below as well.
Thank you.
Lindsay, this was such an amazing conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. It's a lot of fun. Too.
Yeah. And I'm going to have you on mine. So
yes. Let's go.
Cool. All right. Thanks
for tuning in, everybody. Remember, let's try to be better tomorrow than we were today. Because if we don't make it, we tried. Have a great week.